Welcome to the 30-Minute VOA Learning English Podcast. I'm Katie Weaver. Today, we start with As It Is. Then we have a health report. And finally, a special report about the third president of the United States, Thomas Jefferson.
From VOA Learning English, this is As It Is. I'm Anna Mateo in Washington. Money. There are several sayings that warn about money. Money is the root of all evil. Money can't buy you happiness. But there is another one. Money makes the world go round. Money may not be the answer to happiness, but it certainly helps to have some. Later in the show, you will learn words to help you save money. But first, what if you could close your eyes and simply think your way to being rich? That is just what a famous book from the 1930s promised could be done. And now, there is a comic book version. Here for more on that story is June Sims. While you listen, I'm going to think myself rich. I am rich. I am rich. I'm super rich. I am rolling in money.
Can you think your way to wealth and success? Napoleon Hill believed that if you think the right thoughts, you can. In 1937, after many years of researching financial success and observing people who had become rich, he published the book, Think and Grow Rich. Although it was published in the middle of the Great Depression, it was an immediate success. It is one of the most popular nonfiction books ever written. Forbes magazine says it has sold 70 million copies since it first appeared and continues to sell copies today. Napoleon Hill wrote at least 10 other books about success before his death in 1970. But none of them came close to selling as many copies as Think and Grow Rich. Smarter Comics has released an illustrated version of the book. Franco Arda is the company's founder and publisher. He used to work as an investment banker. He started the company 3 years ago with his own money. He wanted to create picture books that increase understanding. His versions provide much of the information that is in full-length books, but in an easy-to-understand picture or comic form. Mr. Arda says readers will understand and remember more about gaining success if they read the comic book version of Think and Grow Rich.
Because it's illustrated, it's a comic book style. One, it's easier to read, and two, it's also easier to remember.
Mr. Arda says he first read Think and Grow Rich when he was a teenager. He credits the book for much of his financial success. He says it taught him to change the way he thinks about money and success.
We have to start with your brain first, to subconsciously program yourself towards riches that you can imagine or that you think money, and obviously that you create a plan afterwards.
Mr. Arda says Napoleon Hill found that you must write down what you want to achieve, how and when you want to achieve it, and what you are willing to sacrifice for it. Napoleon Hill said you must read that statement out loud every morning when you wake up and every evening before you go to sleep. Smarter Comics says Think and Grow Rich proves that wealth is a lifelong pursuit, achieved by believing in the value of personal ideas. It says anyone can achieve their dreams by refusing to be stopped by temporary problems. I'm June Sims.
And I'm Ana Mateo. You are listening to As It Is. We just heard a report on how to think your way to more money. I tried, and so far nothing has happened. But there is another way. Next, we hear about ways to save money. Mario Ritter has some idioms and words that are all about saving you money.
Are you a saver or a spender? A penny saved is a penny earned. This old saying calls attention to the wisdom of saving money. Putting money away for a rainy day is another way to talk about saving for the future. People who hate to spend money are known as tightwads, while those who like to get the most value for their money are called thrifty. A thrifty person is different from a spendthrift. A spendthrift is someone who spends wastefully. People like that are often said to spend money like a drunken sailor, or like there's no tomorrow. In the United States, people who want to start a savings account have different choices of where to put their money. These include banks and credit unions. Credit unions are cooperatives for people who have some kind of connection. For example, the members might work for a university or a government agency. Most credit unions are nonprofit organizations. Credit unions, banks, and other financial institutions pay interest on savings accounts, but the interest rates are low. Certificates of deposit pay higher returns. With a certificate of deposit, or CD, a person agrees not to withdraw the money for a certain period of time. This term could be anywhere from a few months to several years. Longer terms and larger amounts pay higher interest. People can withdraw their money early, but they have to pay a penalty. Another way to save is through a money market fund. This is a kind of mutual fund. Mutual funds invest money from many people. The money is sometimes placed in short-term government securities. Money market funds, however, may not be federally guaranteed like other kinds of savings. The Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation guarantees savings up to $250,000. I'm Mario Ritter.
And I'm Ana Mateo. How are you with money? Do you spend like there's no tomorrow? Or do you believe in saving for a rainy day? Use our comment section to practice some of the idioms you heard in the show. And join us again tomorrow for another As It Is. From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. For some people, the warmest memories from childhood come from being read a great story. But reading to children does more than create warm memories. It develops children's language skills and increases their ability to succeed in school and later work.
A new report
by the American Academy of Pediatrics says reading aloud is so important that parents should start as soon as their children are born, and they should continue to read aloud even after their children can read by themselves. Doctors say parents should read books that are not too long and on the right age level, so children will not lose interest. They say parents should also point to and talk about pictures in books for infants. For young children, parents should ask questions about the book. The AAP report also suggests that doctors offer books in the waiting rooms of their offices. During regular checkups, doctors can then watch a child's language and literacy development, as well as the parent-child relationship. One mom in Washington, D.C. says she has seen the benefits of reading to her children.
Why are children's books so important?
Oh my gosh, we read books every day.
Elizabeth Littleton has three daughters. They are ages 10, 8, and 2.5. Ms. Littleton says all her children learn from books, but in different ways.
Opening minds. I watch the language in my 2.5-year-old, who is now getting, you know, big language explosion. So much of it comes from the books that she reads. So much of her capacity to identify the world around her comes from books that we read together. With my 8-year-old, it's now the, broadening horizons. The oldest now truly reads for pleasure and can get absolutely lost in young adults' books.
But children like Miss Littleton's daughters are becoming increasingly rare. Researchers find that the number of children who read for fun is dropping fast. The company Scholastic is a major U.S. publisher of children's books. Every 2 years, Scholastic publishes a report on American reading attitudes and habits. The 2015 report says only 31% of children in the U.S. read a book for fun almost every day. 4 years ago, that number was more than double. Scholastic also identifies some ways to develop a love of reading in a child. One is simply to have books in the home. Elizabeth Littleton, the mother of three, was lucky. Her mother wrote and illustrated children's books, so the family always had plenty to read.
I mean, we have bookshelves full of kids' books, and they're still there when we go to my mom's house.
Another way to develop a reading habit in children is to read to them. Researchers from the Scholastic Company found that 80% of children surveyed, of all ages, say they love being read to, and children ages 6 to 11, whose parents do not read to them anymore, say they miss it. The Scholastic report also suggests permitting children to choose their own books. Of all the 6 to 17-year-olds in the Scholastic study, more than 90% said their favorite books are the ones they chose for themselves. A book does not have to be serious to be good for kids. Elizabeth Littleton says one of her children's favorite books is called Four Hens and a Rooster. It is a big picture book about hens that must defend themselves against a bullying rooster who is trying to take over the farm. Miss Littleton says the story is awesome and empowering. In a bizarre way.
Yes, it is hilarious and awesome and in a really bizarre way super empowering to little girls. My oldest now will read it to the youngest and she gets it. Like she sees the adult humor in it, but is also getting the power message in it.
So. Amanda Ingram is a fifth grade teacher in Washington, D.C. She says the book Holes is popular with her students, many of whom are African American. She says the book is funny, but it also deals with big social issues.
But the book that I've noticed has really made an impact on students is the book Holes. By Lewis Zacher. And the book is really funny, but also very serious. It touches on race relations and economic struggles, as well as environmental issues. And I've noticed the students really connect with the character and really learn a lot from his experience.
According to Scholastic, 70% of kids in the U.S. between ages 6 and 11 want to read books that are funny. The same study found that 54% of children want books that allow them to use their imaginations, and 41% want to read a book with a good mystery or problem to solve.
Of course, adults can enjoy children's books too, and many adults find that the books they read as children taught them lessons they still remember.
Amanda Ingram, the fifth grade teacher, says, her favorite children's book is The Little Prince. She says it introduced her to big philosophical ideas.
And my favorite children's book is The Little Prince by Antoine de Saint-Exupéry. And this book has special meaning to me because my mother was a French teacher when I was growing up, and so she read it to me in both English and French. And it was the first time that I was exposed to these kind of bigger ideas of philosophy. And I think that it just has these great sort of world topics and lessons that kids can learn at a young age, but they can also revisit the book at an older age.
Vera Song is also a teacher in Washington, D.C. The book Around the World in 80 Days by Jules Verne left a deep mark on her. She says it taught her she needed to be brave and adventurous if she wanted to travel the world. She says she thought of this book often as she traveled from China to the United States to become a teacher.
He decides, like, I'm going to do it. So he travels a lot, and that just inspires me. Like, it's time to take the challenge and be open-minded, and the world is large.
I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
In 1962, President John F. Kennedy welcomed Nobel Prize winners to the White House. He said, "I think this is the most extraordinary collection of talent, of human knowledge, that has ever been gathered together at the White House, with the possible exception of when Thomas Jefferson dined alone." Kennedy's comment shows how vividly Jefferson lives in the American imagination, even more than 100 years after his presidency and death. In the United States, Jefferson's name is often linked to the country's history of self-government, slavery, separation of church and state, and public education. Jefferson was born in 1743 and raised in the hills and low mountains of Virginia. He was considered an aristocrat. His family's wealth permitted him an excellent education in classic languages, science, literature, philosophy, and law. Jefferson also learned to ride horses, dance, and explore the natural world. In the 1770s, Jefferson supported the coming American Revolution. He became a member of the Second Continental Congress and is famous for being the lead writer of the Declaration of Independence. The document declared the American colonies' separation from England. It also asserted that all men are created equal and have the rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Jefferson went on to hold many positions in the country's new state and national governments. He was a governor of Virginia, a minister to France, a secretary of state for President George Washington, and the vice president under President John Adams. But Jefferson often wrote to his friends about how he most wanted to retire from public service and return to his home in Virginia. In the 1760s, he designed a house on a hilltop he called Monticello. The word means little mountain in Italian. Jefferson spent most of his life changing and improving the house. He hired dozens of workmen to build it. He also put some of his slaves to work on it. During his life, Jefferson owned about 600 slaves. That meant about 130 lived on Monticello at any time. They worked in Jefferson's house, tobacco and wheat farms, and on special projects such as making cabinets and nails. Jefferson expressed mixed feelings about slavery. He said he disliked the practice and that he believed God would judge slave owners severely. In 1782, he wrote, "Indeed, I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, that his justice cannot sleep forever." And of course, many people pointed out that Jefferson himself wrote in the Declaration of Independence, "All men are created equal." Yet Jefferson did not use his power to end slavery. He expected future generations would permit slavery in the United States to end slowly. Jefferson's words and actions on slavery are contradictory. The contradiction is especially significant because evidence suggests he had a long relationship with a young slave at Monticello. Her name was Sally Hemings. Most historians now believe what the Hemings family has said all along. Jefferson was the father of Sally Hemings' 6 children of record. Thomas Jefferson left Monticello to become the country's 3rd president. The election of 1800 was important because it was a break from the earlier administrations. The first 2 presidents, George Washington and John Adams, were Federalists. In other words, they supported a strong federal government. Thomas Jefferson, on the other hand, was a Republican, although the term meant something different in his time than it does for today's Republicans. Jefferson supported the power of the states and the people themselves. The Federalists disagreed with Jefferson's point of view. However, they accepted the results of the election and permitted the government to transfer peacefully. Some Federalists may have also been comforted by Jefferson's inaugural address, the speech he gave when he officially became president. In it, Jefferson famously said, "We are all Republicans. We are all Federalists." Many listeners probably believed Jefferson was saying his administration would support ideas from both Republicans and Federalists. But historian Joseph Ellis points out that Jefferson did not capitalize the names of the political groups in his speech. Instead, Ellis says, Jefferson was likely saying the American public supported a strong system of state governments united under a federal bond. Indeed, Jefferson led his administration by his Republican beliefs, mostly. As president, he greatly lessened the power of the federal government. He cut the national debt. He reduced the military. He disliked the power of the Supreme Court over the laws Congress made. And he rejected appearances that made the U.S. president look like a European king. One of the lasting images of Jefferson in the American imagination is of him receiving guests in old clothes and slippers. But as president, Jefferson also appeared strong and powerful when dealing with foreign nations. Jefferson increased American naval forces in the Mediterranean to combat threats to U.S. ships. And he permitted American officials to buy a huge area of land from France, even though the Louisiana Purchase added to the national debt and exceeded the power the Constitution gave the president. In general, historians consider Jefferson's first term as president a success. Voters did too, because he easily won a second term. But those last 4 years were more difficult. Jefferson's popularity suffered, especially when he stopped all U.S. trade with Europe. Jefferson aimed to limit American involvement in a war between Britain and France. Instead, he ruined the U.S. economy. When Jefferson returned to Monticello in 1809, he was happy to leave the presidency behind, and some people were happy to see him go. Jefferson's critics attacked both his political ideas and his personal qualities. Even friends such as John Adams and James Madison suggested in their letters that Jefferson was too idealistic. Federalists, including Washington and Hamilton, worried Jefferson's Republican ideas would weaken the strong federal government and national economy they had worked hard to create. Jefferson is also negatively linked to the history of Native Americans and slavery in the U.S. He tried to get Indian nations to enter into treaties that ultimately took away their land. He asked that they become more like European Americans. And his policies made them depend on the U.S. government. And Jefferson took no major action to end slavery, either in his personal life or as a public figure. In fact, historian Joseph Ellis points out that some of Jefferson's actions increased the power of the slaveholding South and supported slavery in the Western states. Jefferson instead wanted to be remembered for three things: writing the Declaration of Independence, supporting religious freedom, and creating the University of Virginia. For the most part, he is. Jefferson's political opponents accused him of not being a Christian, although he said he was. But many Americans supported Jefferson's views on the separation of church and state. He wrote that government should worry only about acts that hurt other people. However, he said, it does not harm him if his neighbor says, "There are 20 gods or no gods. It neither picks my pocket nor breaks my leg." Jefferson also famously supported free public education, especially for those who could not pay for school. He established both the idea and the architecture for the University of Virginia in Charlottesville. The public university remains one of the top colleges in the United States. Jefferson died at Monticello at the age of 83. The last detail of his life, which Americans love to tell, is that he passed away on America's birthday, exactly 50 years after the signing of the Declaration of Independence. I'm Katie Weaver.